People are grateful in a perfect country. Patriotism isn't seen as a weird aberration. It's an appropriate response. You don't just feel proud of what you've achieved. You can feel part of a bigger, better, collective adventure. Now, the surprising thing is that Perfect Land is, oddly, not so far from many of the places we live in already. All we need is a little more philosophy and a lot more willpower and imagination, and we'll get there.
And that's all the time we have this week. This is Don saying, eyes open, minds on.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Thanks for listening to Radio Free Thinker. Remember to visit us online at radiofreethinker.com. And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you have any local skeptical events you would like us to mention on the air, email us at info@radiofreethinker.com.
Venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 million suns. The rising of the Milky Way.
Are you interested in indigenous issues? Do you get ticked off with ongoing colonization? Do you have something to say? Or do you want to learn more? We have just the thing. Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective at CITR Radio, Unceded Musqueam Territories. Our show, Unceded Airwaves, airs every Monday from 11 to 12, and we meet from 12 to 1 to plan our upcoming shows. We're interested in content covering various things from film to literature, current day politics, history, whatever you want to talk about, we're into it. Everyone welcome, Indigenous and non-Indigenous.
Hello, this is Textbook on CITR 101.9, broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish territory.
Hello.
This is a dry run of the show. My name is Joshua Gabardouin. I'm with
Christine Powell.
Officially, this show isn't supposed to start until next week, but we're doing a little soft opening. Little test ride. So gonna play some music today and gonna do some talking. Christine is in here today to talk about the student exec and CITR. It seems fitting for the first episode of this, what used to formerly be the student special hour.
So fit. If you listened, we were at a different time these past few weeks, but I've been talking a lot about the student exec and CITR in general. This is so exciting to have Josh take charge.
I think we have a very good year coming up in terms of CITR stuff. Lots of changes. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, what's going on this year, and what we're going to be doing. Christine, how was your day?
My day was great. I'm a student. I was in classes all day. I had to click into one of them, like a little pawn. But other than that, really great. I watched a movie called, a film called The Earth Trembles in my Italian film class and learned a lot about the Marxist spirit there in Italy.
Wow, that's great. That sounds super good.
It was really interesting. It was all about like fishermen, and they just looked like American Apparel models, like all of them. It was really bad.
Tell me a little bit about why you got started with CITR.
I came into CITR at first because I think I was overwhelmed by the space here on campus and by the faces and looking for a people, I guess. So the first thing that drew me into CITR was other people that were interested in independent arts and independent culture, I guess. But that really led me into a lot of personal discovery of my love for independent music, especially. I got started in the music department, writing reviews. I really, really loved that and going to shows for free. But Now I'm the flipping co-pres.
Yeah, started from the bottom. Exec. That's cool. Yeah, I think the music department, it was the place where I started too. I think it's a great like avenue in, and it's just so exciting too.
Totally. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Just like part of it was like a cruel love of being the first to hear new stuff. Yeah, and I loved opening the mail and being like, yes, no one at the station has listened to this yet. I'm going to be the first.
Right.
But then it was it wasn't necessarily out of like a, this is better than anything else. It was the, I'm the first. And now I have like a strong, strong passion for those independent artists and those small record labels.
When the time that I spent when I was really volunteering in the music department and I was music department head, I remember that music that came out of that period so well. And I was with it.
It's crazy. Like last year I was pulling stuff off of the playlist that had been put on a year ago. And I was like, I did like all of these reviews.
Right.
It's insane. And I remember especially reading all of your reviews, because through the playlist, you would always reject things from the playlist. Like on the charts inside, when you're recommending like what should go on the playlist, Josh's reviews were always just like, garbage, worst music ever, do not recommend.
I think the longer I stayed in the music department, the more you kind of get a little cynical with all of the music coming in.
Yeah.
It's rough because it's people's livelihood.
Well, but sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes it's like one of five bands.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, a lot of the times it's people's dreams, Josh.
Yeah, and then you're just 30 seconds in and you know it's not going to work. It's, God, I feel bad about giving bad reviews, though.
Riff.
Yeah, that feels nasty. What are the plans for CITR? The exact, well, just in general, the station. What are the event plans this year? I know we have some. We had a listening party on Friday.
Yeah, we had a listening party. It was really exciting. I guess the role of the student exec this year is just to keep the ship headed in the right direction. We moved into our new space just a year ago, and I think we're all slowly adjusting to new environments, and we're still exploring what it means to be CITR and Discorder in this new space. I know, well, okay, we did a lot of collaborations with the Film Society, for example, last year and in previous years, and they don't have a theater anymore, so event-wise, like, we're still navigating these waters. Mm-hmm. Plus, a lot of it, of the events this year, we're trying to really, like, evaluate what our role is as the student executive in throwing events. Like, what is the purpose of the events? Maybe we throw a fundraiser in the February. We threw one last year, and that earned a lot of money. So it seems like that will happen again. It was largely student bands last year, which is a really nice, that's a nice thing to do, is to focus on small, tiny artists that maybe haven't performed before.
There's definitely that sense, though, that at a certain point, are you just throwing parties? Is that what you're doing? That's cool if you're doing that.
Yeah, radio parties are fun.
Radio parties are really fun. And then we have CITR's annual Battle of the Bands.
Oh, yeah, Shindig is coming up real soon.
Really soon.
I cannot wait.
Yeah.
It's going to be so fun.
Do you know the venue for this year? Because that's changed over the last little while, hasn't it?
Is it not at Pat's Pub?
I think we're doing Pat's Pub again this
year. I think it's been...
But I have very fond memories of the Hindenburg 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But Pat's Pub is a really good, undervalued
venue. I didn't know the textbook was a trick question. You brought people onto your show to interrogate them.
You know, I like to throw in a wild card question sometimes just to see if people are awake.
Yeah, but you're right. No, it did switch from the Hindenburg to Pat's Pub, and Pat's Pub is lovely. Pat's Pub is, has a lot of beer options, and it's in near the Hindenburg, so people weren't too upset last year, I don't think. There's a lot of poles to lean on while you watch the music.
It's an interesting space. It's a dynamic space.
Mm-hmm.
Hindenburg was also a dynamic space.
Yes.
With their, like, fetish room. But
fetish room, rats.
They had rats?
I hope this doesn't, like, shut them down. But they did. I've seen them.
Wow.
I know.
I saw a field mouse yesterday outside of a car dealership on Burrard Street, which was kind of funny because field mice are not supposed to be in places like that.
Yeah, it's the urban coming into the jungle. I saw one under my desk yesterday.
Whoa.
It was so cute.
I just heard a dog in the sub as I was coming in the nest barking very loudly.
That's not allowed.
I don't think it's allowed at all.
It's not allowed.
What else can you tell me about CITR? What else do we have planned this year?
What else is going on this year? This is low key, but I think we're going to have another series of docs this year, shorter documentaries. If you listened last year, we had a round of documentaries celebrating the UBC 100 centennial that all used footage from our CITR archives. But I'm thinking, from what I've heard, the rumors are that this year the docs will be less thematic and more open to interpretation for people to do what they want with them, with their time.
That's super exciting.
It's so exciting, like literally so exciting. And another cool thing that the exec is kind of involved with is we're having a pod club startup.
Oh, I did hear mumblings about that.
Yeah, which would be rad. Like, all I want to do is sit around and talk about podcasts. So
yeah, that's going to be more good radio content for sure.
It's good. Yeah.
Christine, do you have a song for us today?
Yeah, why don't you play Tough Luck by Sneaks? This is a band from Washington, D.C. that I fell in love with this week. I've been listening to them en repeat. En repeat. I don't know, Josh. But the album is Gymnastics, and it's just them, a bass, and a drum machine, I think. So...
And they're from D.C., is that what you're saying?
Yes, and they're from D.C.
This is Tough Love.
Tough Luck.
Oh, there we go. Tough Luck from Sneaks off of their new one, Gymnastics. Hi there.
Hello.
We're back. Textbook CITR 101.9 out of the University of British Columbia. My name's Josh. This is Christine. You just heard Gymnastics, which is the EP by Sneaks. The song is Tough Luck. We are talking about CITR, and we're talking about Christine's show, Fresh Slice.
I have a show on Fridays from 1 to 2 called Fresh Slice with my buddy Quinn, where we play music a lot like that. Like, if you love that, you'll love my music taste because I picked that. Yeah.
You also get up to shenanigans?
Sometimes there are shenanigans. Quinn took a test to see if she was a sociopath on air.
Wow, that's...
Last week. She's not.
That's good. That's really good news.
Yeah.
And Fresh Slice is named after the pizza place.
Mm, we love Fresh Slice.
Do you really?
Love it.
Arguably the worst pizza in Vancouver.
Well, yeah, I'm going to argue the opposite. It's amazing.
It's like many, many rungs below something like Uncle Fatty's. Many, many, many rungs below something like Pizza Garden. But I respect it. It smells great. It's by the Main Street 99 stop. So you're walking by that all the time. I feel
it's the best pizza in the country, if not the world.
So part of this show, Textbook, I wanted to split into segments. Usually it would be three segments, interview, stories, and then tell me about your paper. This week, I'm going to switch it up a little bit for the dry run. Christine is going to tell me about her paper.
In surprise to all of us.
It's a last-minute development. I'm asking Christine about her research. Basically, the idea of this segment is tell me about your paper, tell me about your essay. It's just the worst question to be asked at a party because either you're going to be droning on and nobody wants to hear about it, or you're going to be droning on because you really, really like what you're talking about, but nobody's going to be able to understand you, or maybe you just have no idea what you're talking about and it's just half-baked, which is also a really bad position to be in. But Duet, you're working on papers for like 3 weeks and it's your life, or longer if you're doing research. It's your life. It's so important to you and nobody else knows what's going on, and that's crazy. So tell me about your paper, Christine.
I wanted, first of all, argue with you a little bit. Okay. I want to say that I love hearing about people's papers, and I think this is awesome because so rare, people are embarrassed to talk about it.
Yeah, they
think that they're going to bore people, but I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting.
Let the record show, I also like to hear about people's papers, but I understand that asking them about it in a party context, it can be tough.
It can be tough I'll talk about my paper a little bit, though.
Yeah.
So this summer and for the previous year, I was cleaning fish tanks. On every weekend, I came to school and cleaned fish tanks, six 25-gallon fish tanks, zebrafish. And the whole time, the fish really interacted with me when I was cleaning the tanks, and I kind of thought that they dug it. So the lab that I was in was actually set up to study the welfare of zebrafish in these enriched tanks. They had a lot of space, and the tanks maybe looked something like what their natural environment might look like. My research looked at the changes in their social behavior when I was conducting the water changes. And I guess, like, the easiest way to say it is that it's very exploratory research, so that it's actually, there isn't very much work being done on zebrafish and their social behavior. So in that way, it's kind of a challenge because the research that I'm doing isn't really based. We invented the ways to read their behavior, and the interpretation is really going to come up against some brick walls, I think. But what I'm measuring, the outcomes are probably measured in aggression between the fish and like how close they are to each other.
That's pioneering research, no matter what.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. And it's been really fun for me to just like try research and see whether I like it. And I think I might not like it that much.
Right.
So.
But a lot of people don't have the chance. I definitely don't really have a chance to try that kind of research. So that's, I see the value in that.
You can
for sure.
You move words around, man. And
yeah, but it's not the same as actually moving fish around. I would imagine that when you're changing the water, the fish are really anxious and stressed out.
So that's one thing that I was definitely looking for is like, okay, do they hate this? Like, is this putting them in a state of intense fear every time I do it? And one time when I was cleaning the fish tank, I was putting new water in, and I stopped that, which creates a vacuum and sucks water back up into the tube. And because I was doing it by myself, I couldn't prevent it, that from happening. And I thought I saw a little black thing go up into the tube when I was cleaning the tank. So I turn the water back. I'm laughing because I'm crying on the inside. So I turn the water back on, and a little fish body and a little fish head went back into the tank. As fast as I could, I went and got that out. And we have a video of me, like, looking at the fish. And it's, like, really sad because you can see me counting them and being like, no, 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 9? Where's 10? It's really sad. But the thing that the point of the story is that I could see that the other fish were acting, or they were swimming erratically. They were swimming really fast. They were cowering in a corner. And so I have a really good idea of what it looks like when these guys are quite scared. And that behavior is just altogether totally different from the kind of behaviors that we saw when I was cleaning their tanks. So It's like, it is bad, and like, so much of animal research can't induce these really, really bad states that tell us so much about behavior. Right. But just working closely with the fish, like, you kind of know.
They're little guys.
They're tiny.
Yeah. They're little guys swimming around. I remember you were saying when you had them, I think you still have them at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
You still have the ones from the...
Yeah, I just got some more.
Great. And you were having trouble because copper in the water? The lead in the water?
Yeah. I guess, so I live in a building that's probably 50 years old or more, and there's just all this copper sediment in our water. And at UBC, the fishery lab, all of that water is treated really intensely before it even goes into the tap. But at home, I have to Brita filter all my water because there's so much copper in it. The fish do not like that. It kills them.
Wow.
It can't be good for the human body either, strong.
That's my first thoughts as well. And is the research that you're doing on fish also supposed to inform conclusions about human behavior, or
no the point of the research is because zebrafish are actually the number one animal used in science in Canada today, more than rats and more than mice, because so much of genetic research is done on fish. It's easier to justify your research on fish, which are considered less sentient and less deserving of, I don't know.
That's, I don't know. I had no idea about that statistic. There is definitely that argument, and I think it's compelling.
It's easier to get your research passed if you want to do it on fish, but we simply just don't know what fish prefer, what they like, and how they want to be housed. So it's very, very important in science that you are conducting your science on a model that aligns closely with the model that you want it to pertain to. So if it's humans, you don't want all of these models that your science is being tested on at first to be incredibly stressed out or maybe like brain dead because they're so bored. That's not going to be the model that you'll be conducting the larger research on eventually. So if those models are flawed, all the science could be flawed.
Right. Super interesting stuff though.
Yeah, no. Oh, it's the best. It's really, really, really interesting.
What's the trajectory looking like? You're working on this now?
So I've collected all my data. I watched all these videos. I watched 40 days.
Sped up, though.
I watched every 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of footage. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was like 5,000 lines of data. And then now I'm writing my methods, crunching the numbers. I'll write my introduction and try to get published in December.
Wow, that's so exciting.
Yeah, it's a little, it feels like, it's really, really exciting. It's exciting because then once this study is published and we know that maybe water changes do make fish are an exciting stimulus for fish, then you can say, okay, well, like, what does the, is this what it looks like when fish play? Or do novel stimuluses help fish learn better and those kind of things? So,
wow, that's cool.
It's very, very exciting.
That's sweet. Do you have another song for us?
Yes, the other album that I've been playing on repeat is in a different vein. It's the Adrian Teacher and the Subs album. I love it. Terminal City. And why don't you play Forget America?
Okay, this is Forget America from the new Adrian Teacher and the Subs.
Begin to drift. 20 years of schooling, and they put you on the split shift. Forget America. Vision that they had, vision that they flaunt. Everybody lives like a debutante.
CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q, what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
But what are kings when regiment is gone? But perfect shadows in a sunshine day. UBC Theater and Film presents Edward II by Christopher Marlowe, September 29th to October 15th at the Telus Studio Theater in the Chan Center. For tickets, visit theaterfilm.ubc.ca or call 604-822-2678. Monarch. Prisoner. Corpse.
This is CITR 101.9. We're back on Textbook. I'm here with Christine Powell, who's just telling us about her research with zebrafish. I'm also here with...
Avash Islam. Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Hanging out. So Christine was telling us about CITR. She was telling us about exec stuff this year. There's always ways to get involved with CITR. You can always come down to the station and help out.
Yeah, please. Take a tour any day at 12.
At 12 o'clock?
Except for the weekend.
I mean, yeah, Monday to Friday. We're always here, which is great. And you can host your own show. You can do stuff with Discorder.
Yeah, what else can you do? You can get into shows for free. You can do illustrations. You can take photos. You could write reviews. You could write show reviews. You could, oh man, oh my gosh, I'm losing my breath. You can write radio plays and play those on the air.
This is what we will be doing, me and Avash.
Yep.
Christine, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, happy show coronation.
Thanks. Thanks for telling me about your paper.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Great. Avash.
Hey there.
Do you have a song that you want to play to start us off?
Let's go with, I've been listening to a musician named Mitski a lot, M-I-T-S-K-I. Let's listen to Liquid Smooth.
Okay, I'm going to cue that up here. What can you tell us about Mitski?
Mitski, she, as far as I'm aware, she's a indie New York-based musician. I don't actually know too much about her. I've been turned on to her by one of my friends and have just been on a kick of sort of her songs, but I haven't sort of like looked into too much about her. There is like a definite break in her music between like this album, I think came out in 2012. It's a lot more orchestral, a lot of like St. Vincent sort of Bjork influences, and she's moved on to more sort of like garage rock now, but I really dig this album and I like this track in particular a lot.
Great, I'm excited to hear it. This is Mitski, Liquid Smooth, on CITR 101.9.
I'm at my highest peak.
My name is Josh.
I'm Vosh.
We're on Textbook, CITR 101.9. This is a dry run of a show that is usually going to be at this time regularly, formerly called the Student Special Hour. Now it's called Textbook. It's going to be a mix of interviews and stories and talking about research and, you know, papers. It's school stuff, but it's also not school stuff. We just heard Mitski, Liquid Smooth. Avash, how's your day going?
My day? Going pretty good. Just got out of class with you, so you've been privy to the entirety of my academic day.
2 o'clock to...
Two o'clock to four.
Yeah. Super interesting class on debt.
Yeah, gifts. Debt, giving, and the commons. We read a very, very long and kind of dry reading by Giovanni Arrighi about the economic workings of essentially the entire 20th century.
It's Italian Marxist Day here at CITR 101.9.
Apparently it is, yeah. There were no American apparel models this time around, though.
No, but there was Italian
Marxism.
Right. So I hear you are going to read a story today.
I am. I'm going to read a fairly short piece, a flash fiction piece. Do you want me to give like a little intro about it?
Yeah, that'd be great. You're a creative writing student.
Yeah, creative writing and English honors. So yeah, this was for my fiction class. I'm exploring writing genre fic, fantasy, sci-fi, and horror more now, because that was sort of like my primary interest, what kind of got me into the literary arts in the first place, and it's something I want to experiment with more. So this is like a sort of like short... a short flash fiction piece that I wrote in the style of like a bad early 19th century research paper.
Okay, great. So appropriate for the show.
Yeah. So I'm, yeah, it's
great. What's the title?
The title is called The Life Cycle of Goblins.
Okay, please go into it by all means.
So abstract. Originating from a particular genus of fungi, goblins emerge autochthonously when exposed to particular frequencies associated with adventure. Attempts to stimulate goblin production artificially have met with failure. Their natural inclination to antagonism stems not from malice or aggression. Indeed, when left to their own devices, goblins exhibit behaviors of play and sympathy, albeit in their own bizarre and demented forms. It seems that an innate drive simply compels them against all forms of industry, primarily adventurers supplying influxes of wealth from forgotten ruins. Their phobic antipathy of currency and vehicles seem to give credence to this theory. Since complex strains of protein in fungi are capable of encoding enormous amounts of information, it is hypothesized that memories within a certain goblin grove are passed on generationally. Given the short generational cycle of a goblin, their intelligence increased exponentially, though still remaining at the level of savage barbarism, and they began to parley with adventurers rather than meet a grisly end at sword and spell. Thus, the goblin was introduced to civilization. Attempts were made to integrate them into society, but their natural tendencies were to laziness and indolence, and they would not associate with non-goblinoids. However, when noted industrialist Zarkov Kvan introduced goblins into his workforce, he was met with great success. Though they would not accept pay, labor regulations applied only to humanoids, so this was not a problem. And while most considered goblins too lazy to ever be of any practical use in industry, Kvan noted their naturally submissive natures. Once an adventurer himself, Kvan knew that goblin groves were often headed by a bugbear or an orc or some other larger creature, and thus knew their susceptibility to intimidation. This was a revolutionary moment in our history, and our industrial and technological revolution was in large part made possible by pioneers like Kvan, who saw the potential of a goblinoid workforce. While in the wild the goblin's lifespan is short, they do not appear to suffer the effects of aging, though symptoms of decomposition are exhibited when they fall into a malaise bearing outward similarities to depression in humans. Originally, it was conjectured that this process occurred when a goblin was separated from its familial unit, though this was disproven when whole groves of goblins began undergoing decomposition simultaneously. However, due to successive generations originating from the same biomass as the previous and the stimulus that decomposing goblin corpses provided to local flora, this was initially deemed to be of no issue. While citizens did complain at first of the repugnant and malodorous nature of the various goblin corpses littering the streets, They were soon repurposed for agricultural and urban landscaping purposes, giving way to a boom in produce and unprecedented biodiversity within the city. Our famed dusk bloom trees are believed to be the result of mutative stimulus provided by goblin proteins. We turn then to the problem at hand, that goblins, indispensable for the length of their productive lives, have a higher rate of decomposition with each successive generation.
God, that's pretty devastating.
It is. It is. A lot of people took it. Humorously, and there is like a little bit of humor in there, but yeah. I mean,
that's the best kind of humor, really. But
yeah, also, like a little bit of a dark, devastating humor.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. God, that's pretty rough, man. I like it. I like it a lot. We were laughing. I guess when the microphones were off. With Christine about some other stories about research animals.
Yeah, personhood, non-human personhood. That's like a big sort of topic that like comes up a lot nowadays.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does, and I think that there's interesting intersections with animal rights for sure, and kind of almost doing it backwards in a way.
Right. Well, the philosophical definition of a person is like one to whom society extends moral considerations. So like it's pretty much concomitant with any rights movement, is that to grant rights upon someone is to grant them the status of a full autonomous person.
Right. And I guess that there's that sense with sentience too, and who mm-hmm. gets sentience in a sense.
Yeah, who gets to think.
Who gets to think, right. And there's a story that I've actually called you to get you to tell other people in the past.
Yeah, several times. About Alex the gray parrot.
The saddest story ever told.
in certain sense, and like an interpersonal sense, scientifically, like a giant boon for like the community. Alex was probably the most successful case of like an animal being taught human language. He was an African gray parrot, a species noted for like their remarkable intelligence, and, you know, parrots capable of mimicry. So Alex was taught several words, had a fairly robust vocabulary of about, like, 1,000 to 1,500 words, about, like, roughly that of, like, a 6 or 7-year-old child. But what was interesting about Alex that really no other animal has ever displayed before was that Alex was able to synthesize the rules of language in much the same way that children do. He was able to form new sentences that he wasn't taught, learn how to apply words to different situations, learn words just from hearing them and not necessarily being taught them. He was a very precocious parrot. And what's interesting is that like how much this grasp of language, this sort of greater faculty over, is it really allowed Alex, some would say, to develop, I would say to express a personality. Alex was a very eccentric and idiosyncratic parrot. He was very temperamental. He was impatient with other parrots. During tests, when he was you know, being demonstrated for news anchors and such, he would get bored with like tests that he deemed too simple. He would get irritated when other parrots weren't getting the answers as quickly. And I think like one of the most like profound and striking things is seeing Alex say "wanna go back." That's a phrase that he learned on his own, and he would say it whenever he wanted to go back into his cage, into his home. And to me, like, I mean, that's an indicator of volition, of like a creature that wants to do something and doesn't want to do something else, of taste, of like aesthetic or, you know, moral or some kind of sensibility, of like some things register to him as more pleasurable than other things. He has preferences, he has tastes, and, you know, he had bonds, he had friendships. The thing is that Alex and the head researcher, every night, you know, the head researcher, she would shut down the lab and she would say to Alex, "Good night, Alex. Love you." And Alex would reply every night, you know, without fail, "Love you too. Be good." And like this leads into the devastating part of the story, is that African gray parrots are, you know, they have fairly long lifespans. They live to about 30 or 40 years. But one day, Alex, who was a young parrot, I think he was about 15 or 17 in his teens, they came home to the lab and he was just dead of no apparent cause. So the last words, at least the last known recorded words of, you know, the most linguistically fluent parrot ever known were, you know, love you too, be good.
Devastating.
It's pretty rough.
Devastating. The last thing he ever said to humanity, all of us together.
Love you too, be good.
The last words uttered by this parrot, a send off to humanity. Just really devastating stuff. God. I'm going to play a song. I'm going to play a track by Graftician, who's playing next. This is Wolf. Yeah, she's playing next. I guess try not to think about this parrot. I'm really going for the low-hanging fruit today on this show, just like sad animal stories.
Don't blow it all in the dry run. So, you know, save some for the actual show.
Save some of the tears for later. In any case, this is Graftician. The track is Wolf off of Wander Weave. It's Textbook on CITR. I'm Josh.
I'm Afash.
We were just talking about sci-fi and television and Borges after a story that Afash read. And we were we were talking about the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, we were talking about the Sci-Fi Channel. We were talking about sci-fi TV shows, I suppose. We were coming up with, fantasy. It's got a bit of a boom in, like, popular media right now, ever since sort of Jackson's Lord of the Ring and, you know, with Game of Thrones being, like, everything right now, apparently.
Yeah.
And Josh was talking about whether or not there was, like, a sci-fi boom like that.
I was thinking about was, kind of the recent zombie boom.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of dying down, though, isn't it?
I guess so. Walking Dead was just felt like it was so big.
Walking Dead was big, but Walking Dead is, like, now sort of, like, you know, excuse the pun, it is The Walking Dead. Like, it's sort of a show that's just trudging along. The ratings are getting consistently lower every season. The critical consensus is getting consistently lower every season. I mean, the comic book is still running, but Kirkman has jumped ship from that, too.
Really?
Like he's not. I think he's still on the creative team, but, you know, it's not his main project anymore. It's just sort of churning out
that's
the money.
Interesting. Hey, have you watched Atlanta? Yeah.
Oh, the new Donald Glover show? No, not yet.
No, it's really worth checking out. Yeah. Part of what we were just going on about in this class was capitalist realism and this kind of television that's very, I guess it just like adheres to this kind of realist model, and Atlanta does that, but it's an interesting take on things, I guess.
Right. Well, we were also talking about like the sort of like new modes that realism takes on when subjected to these like capitalist pressures, and like of course of it being like a sort of critical term for, you know, what comes after postmodernism, of it being sort of like a synthesis of these, and like we did talk about how TV shows kind of are essentially the best medium for this. I mean, many of the biggest TV shows in recent memory have been like intensely realist shows, like the O.J. Simpson one, Show Me a Hero, that's by the same guy that did The Wire, about the New York housing crisis in the 80s. Is it called Show Me a Hero or
the documentary like or the?
It was a TV show, but it was like, you know, it's like a TV. It was big. It was a big show in 2015.
Yeah,
and then other shows that are sort of like in that.
Yeah,
in that sort of like realist vein.
Right. It's like this sort of it's this kind of real slick realism. And there was interesting thing that we were getting to was kind of like melodrama and the way melodrama kind of came into The Wire.
Right. Well, I think we were discussing how the idea of capitalist realism as a genre, as a mode, is one that like interrogates its own realism of an idea of this sort of like objective totalizing truth of this omniscient eye that can present things as they are and in a continuous narrative structure. I mean, the thing that we mentioned as an example too, was The Big Short, which is like, I mean, ironic considering its use of like metafictional techniques, like breaking the fourth wall of like deliberate pointed real life celebrity cameos within the fiction. It's like a realism that seems to rupture. It can't seem to contain itself.
Yeah. It was very self-aware of that fact too. Mm-hmm. In a sense, we're talking Big Short, the movie that came out, was that last year it came out?
Yeah, last year. Yeah. And I mean, it was self-aware because of, it was aware of like the insufficiencies of narrative to convey these like dense economic ideas.
Right.
It just couldn't be done. And I mean, that was an artistic choice that they had to make in adapting it from a book, which is more amenable to that.
Absolutely. I think that they were also, in an interesting way, a kind of counterpoint to The Wolf of Wall Street, which had come out, the year before, maybe 2 years before?
2013, 2014.
Which had purposely chosen not to explain the difficult stuff, which I remember very, very well. It chosen specifically, I'm not going to explain this tough stuff to you.
Yeah, there's a moment where Jordan Belfort, the main character, begins, and then literally, mid-sentence, interrupts himself and says, you don't care?
Yeah.
I'm not going to explain it.
And there's a cynicism in that, and it's clever, but it's also, I thought The Big Short really responded to that by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely interesting questions. TV works way better for it.
TV and film, yeah.
Yeah, TV and film, absolutely. So this weekend, we have some concerts. I think that Tops are playing this weekend. I know that Spectres are playing at Black Lab for a fundraiser. You guys might want to check that out. Tops, are going to be playing where? Let me find out. What else is going on? Vesh, what are you doing this weekend?
What am I doing this weekend? Probably trying to catch up on readings and prepping assignments, presentations, if I'm being completely honest.
It's getting hairy over here on campus.
It is.
It's getting
This is the middle of the fourth week. I mean, already. Like, we're considerable ways into the semester without us realizing it. That's like about a third in.
Yeah. I was wrong about Tops. Tops playing on. Oh, no. I still don't know when Tops are playing. In any case, I heard Tops are playing. You guys should look that up yourself on Facebook or something. We're just winding down here on textbook. We have Graphetician playing next in the Nest at CITR's headquarters. CITR's only space, frankly. Headquarters or not.
Secret base.
Secret base is another good way of thinking about it. So I'll leave you off with one final song. I'm Josh. This is Textbook CITR 101.9. I'm with
Avash Islam.
We talked about stories. We talked about birds, animals of various sorts. Now you're going to listen to kind of a soothing song to leave you off. Maybe a little sensual. You're going to listen to some Sean Nicholas Savage. The track is Promises. I really like this one. Have a great rest of the week, everybody. Bye.
To be broken.